And now for reading and writing and radio.
I wrote some lines once on a time in wondrous merry mood, and thought, as usual, men would say, they were exceedingly good. They were so queer, so very queer, I laughed as I would die, albeit in the general way, a sober man am I. I called my servant, and he came. How kind it was of him to mind a slender man like me, he of the mighty limb. These to the printer, I exclaimed, and in my humorous way, I added as a trifling jest, there'll be the devil to pay. He took the paper, and I watched, and saw him peep within. At the first line he read, his face was all upon the grin. He read the next, the grin grew broad, and shot from ear to ear. He read the third, a chuckling noise I now began to hear. The fourth, he broke into a roar. The fifth, his waistband split. The sixth, he burst five buttons off, and tumbled in a fit. 10 days and nights, with sleepless eye, I watched that wretched man, and since I never dare to write as funny as I can.
That author was Oliver Wendell Holmes, but it could be you. SSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Well, today we're going to tell some funny stories and ask you to write us in some funny stories, and I want to introduce Joan Meyer and my daughter Jillian, who are here again with me today. Joan is from Taylorville. Some of you have known her as a substitute, and she knows a lot of you, for she reads all the stuff that you send in. And Jill, you have been hearing off and on this program. The idea for this program came from Chris Kolker, who was in Miss Mayall's fifth grade last spring at Harvard Park. And she said, how come you've never asked us for any really funny stories? And so we decided to do that, and the manual pages were written before the program was recorded. We're recording this program rather close to the time that you're hearing it. And Joan and Jill and I have been talking about some of the problems that we've run into when we started to think about recording a program on funny stories. We would like to tell you stories that will cause you to dissolve with laughter, to collapse, to split your sides, to shed tears of mirth, even to wet your pants. I know the teachers wouldn't appreciate that, but but those are the sort we'd like to tell you. But we've decided, or amongst us, that it is very hard to recreate that sort of story over the radio, and even sometimes when you tell a joke for the second time, that the first time everybody enjoyed the story and roared with laughter. Why is that, do you think?
It's situations and circumstances that make things funny, yeah. A lot of times.
And when you tell a story, too, if anybody's like I am, you have to tell it with your hands. And if you can't see a person telling the story, then it isn't nearly as funny as it is when you're watching.
So that when kids write in stories, they'll be funny, but they might be funnier yet if we could hear them, see them with the gestures.
Telling it themselves.
Or be in the circumstances. Something is. Sometimes stories need a build-up, and if you don't know the build-up or the persons involved, it isn't nearly as funny.
Like in books, I'll be reading along sometimes books that I'm laughing out loud at, and you'll hit a line that just sends you rolling, and you'll read it off to whoever's nearest to you, and they look at you like you're crazy. And I usually start backing up to try and cover enough to tell them what's funny, and then they just start getting bored. Why are you reading me all this?
A lot has to do with the mood that you're in when you tell it, and the person that's listening to it
is telling
is in too.
We we did run into that problem, and we discovered some stories that seem to be funny most of the time, but the problem is that we can't tell those over the radio. Bathroom humor and the kinds that deal with bodily functions often are very funny because most of us can put ourselves into those embarrassing situations, and they're sort of universally funny. I think we should say right off that we don't want jokes. We don't want you sending in jokes. We'd like you sending in real stories. Although last year we did get in a few jokes from time to time. Joan, remember the one on the ping pong balls that we didn't dare tell?
Yes.
Didn't dare tell over the air? Yes. Anyway, I was sifting through all the bathroom humor that I knew and that might be fit for the radio, and I don't want to encourage you to send in bathroom stories, but if you have a good one, a really good one, I don't want to discourage you anyway. One of my students last semester told us about his mother who was painting the bathroom, and I guess this would fit as a bathroom story. She was up on a stepladder, and she was painting the bathroom, and she stepped backwards onto the toilet seat off the ladder without looking, and had forgotten that the toilet seat was open. And so she stepped right down into the toilet, and she caught her foot in it. And she yelled and screeched because she couldn't get her foot out of the toilet. And the kids came, and they couldn't get her foot out of the toilet, and so Richard went and telephoned the fire department, of all things. The firemen came. They could not get her foot out of the toilet, and so they unscrewed the toilet, turned off the plumbing, and she went off across town in the fire engine, standing on the back, with one foot in the toilet. And I find that a funny story. I guess the other funny story, bathroom story, that maybe we can tell was told to me by my colleague, John Nofel. He said, oh, do you know the story of the lady that had to be sawed off? And this happened in an airplane, that there was a downdraft, and the lady was using the bathroom in the airplane, and the air pocket or something caused the plane to drop, and she got stuck. And the stewardesses finally discovered her plight, and they couldn't do anything about her. And when the plane finally landed, they covered her with a blanket, and they came in and sawed off the, the airplane seat and carried her out through the airplane. And I don't know how they finally managed to get her.
I knew there was a reason why I always wear my seatbelt in an airplane.
Right. Well, so there are a couple of bathroom stories, and I find them amusing, and I think they're okay for the radio.
Well, they're on it now, so they yes. better be.
And I guess the other bodily function story that maybe we can tell is the famous story in our family of when our friends, the Walshes, were riding across country, and they got into Cleveland on the Greyhound bus, and they had four little kids, and all of a sudden Sarah said, Mama, Mama, I'm going to be sick! And so Eva reached over and whipped the window down and stuck Sarah's head outside the Greyhound bus, and she vomited out the window all over a man that was standing on the sidewalk below.
Oh, how awful.
And I said to Eva after she'd told the story, I said, well, what did you do then? And she said, well, what could you do? She said, I just pulled Sarah back in and closed the window. But you think of that poor man that got it on top of himself. Well, it's I thought of reading to you out of you, meaning the people listening, out of some books, but I'll just refer you to Caddy Woodlawn, for instance, in that funny section where the brother is trying to say the piece over the at the school show, and he's been trained. The piece is, if at first you wait.
if don't succeed, try again.
And over at his house, you see, they've been teasing him, and if at first you fricassee, fry a hen. And when it got to be time for the program, why, instead of saying it the right way, all that would come out was the wrong way. And it's quite a hilarious passage. And then do you remember the hilarious passage in The Little House in the Big Woods, where you hear about the Laura's grandpa who built the sled, and then they couldn't run the sled on Sunday, and they were so anxious to take the sled down the hill, and they were sitting there on their bench, and their father was reading them Bible stories or Bible verses or something like that, and the kids were just so anxious to try out this new sled that they'd finally got built, and he fell asleep, and so they snuck out quietly and got their sled, and they had to be absolutely silent, and they went down the hill. Don't you remember that story? Neither of you remember that? And just as they were going by the house, a pig went across the track where they were running the sled. And the sled very neatly scooped up the pig right on top of the kids. And that pig didn't know that silence was the key word, that they were just going to run that sled once and then sneak back in to listen to their Bible stories and things, because, you know, you weren't supposed to play on Sunday.
Right.
And they went down the hill with that pig just screeching at the top of her lungs. And when they got back in, why, the father was awake, and he looked at them, and they sheepishly went back onto their benches, and he proceeded reading them Bible stories and Bible verses until sundown. And at sundown, he walloped the heck out of them.
You don't get spanked while you're reading Bible stories.
Oh, no, and not on the Sabbath you don't get spanked.
Oh, that
but,
would be good.
But what you don't do, you see, is sneak out and pick up a pig on your
sled
that is going to yell. So those were a couple of funny stories. Well, one reason I wanted you two people here was because both of you tell funny stories, and Joan, I've been wanting you to tell your mustard story. And tell us the story about your mustard. Now, I should tell the radio audience that Joan makes mustard, and that Elspeth, my daughter, my youngest daughter, has a jar of Joan's mustard in the refrigerator, and it's got a sign on it saying, "Death to anyone who uses this mustard without my permission." And so Joan makes up this very special kind of mustard and gives it to her friends in baby food jars. And Joan, tell us the story of the mustard.
Well, I acquired the recipe years ago, and it calls for Coleman's mustard, which is mustard, powdered mustard that's made in England. And I used to be able to buy it in Taylorville, and then suddenly it just disappeared. So I was getting desperate. Well, at one point, a friend of mine's mother lived in Canada, and every time she came down to visit, she'd bring me some mustard. But then she moved to the States, so my mustard supply dried up. So I wrote to the company and explained to them my plight and that I had to have powdered mustard. So a woman wrote me back and said that her salesman would call upon me, thank me for my inquiry. Well, 2 months went by, and I'm now at the grocery store buying mustard, which is really bad compared to what mine tastes like. So I wrote back again, and I said, "Help. You know, I still don't have any mustard. Your salesman hasn't come, and I need it desperately." So she wrote me back and sent me a price list, and I was so delighted, and I looked down the list of all the different sizes that you could buy, and I picked the one at the bottom, which was the most mustard and also the most expensive. And it was 4-ounce cans, which aren't very big. So I thought, well, I was going to buy 2 cases. And I thought, no, I'll buy 4, because then I won't have to do this again for a while, because it's such a hassle. So I sent them a check for the 4 cases of mustard, never thinking, well, gee, that's a lot of money for $72 or whatever it was for four cases of mustard. And
you were so desperate to get the mustard.
Right, I was tickled to death. So one day, I'm sitting on my front porch this summer, and I look out, and a big semi, I mean the semi's the jackknife on the highway, pulled up in front of my little house on the street, which blocked the entire street, and the neighbors are all looking out to see, what is this semi doing on the street? Man got out, and he came to my door and knocked on the door, and he said to me, "Did you order some mustard?" And I said, "Oh, terrific, it's finally here, I'm so excited." And he said, "I stopped at the grocery store down the street, which is a large grocery store, and to deliver it there." And I thought, now that's very strange, because I figure I'm getting a small, 4 small boxes of mustard. And he said, they told me that it was the house down the street, a person's house.
But they hadn't ordered any mustard.
Right, so I walked out to the truck with him, and he opened the back door and takes his dolly out, and he takes out 2 cases of the mustard and puts them on the dolly, and the 2 cases were about the size of a refrigerator carton. I could not believe what I was seeing. And he said, "What do you want me to do with these?" And I was sort of dumbfounded, because I didn't know what I was going to do with them either, and there were 2 more. So I said, "Put them in the kitchen on the kitchen floor." So he wheeled the dolly up to the back door, and he couldn't wheel it up the stairs, so he carried each case up into and put it in the middle of my kitchen floor. And then he went out and got 2 more and brought them in, and there was my kitchen floor, wall to wall, my carpet, mustard cases. I didn't have any place to put them. So finally he said to me, "I want to ask you a question, lady." He says, "What do you do with all this mustard?" And I said, "I make homemade mustard." He said, "Who do you make it for, the world?" And I said, "Well, I can guarantee you one thing. I don't imagine you'll ever have to come back here again and deliver mustard to me." My son was homesick. And so he sat down, and when we opened up the boxes, I had ordered a case of 4-ounce cans. Well, inside each box was a package with 12 4-ounce cans wrapped up, and then there were 24 of these packages. So my son sat down and figured out, how much mustard I had. And I had 1,152 4-ounce jars of mustard, which comes out to, 288 pounds of mustard in my house. And I'm trying to figure out how I can put this in my will. Who do I leave all this mustard to when I die? Because it's going to last for many generations, I'm afraid.
You're going to have to pass on your secret recipe,
yeah,
too,
Joan. It was terrible trying to clean out cupboards and spaces to put all these cans of mustard.
And what is it like now when your friends come and open up a cupboard door to help you in the kitchen and discover it packed solid with mustard?
Well, I told them the story, and they think, my husband goes, every time somebody comes to the house, he opens up the cupboard and says, I want you to see this. Look at this. And it's wall-to-wall mustard. And I made mustard about 200 jars of mustard, I think I made at Christmas time. And I haven't even used one cellophane package yet.
So you barely dented
right.
The amount of mustard. Well, I've always loved that mustard story, especially when the semi-truck driver says, lady, what are you going to do with all this mustard? And took it to the store first.
I think you should have made up some good story.
Well,
like you paint with it or something.
That's true. I could have done that. Then he would have really thought it was a kook.
That you're going to take it up into a helicopter and sprinkle it on the city or something.
I may have to.
Be good for Japanese beetles, maybe, on rose bushes.
If you ever hear of a shortage of mustard, just call me in Taylorville because I guarantee you I've got a corner on the market.
Well, Jill, I specially asked you to be here today, too, because if I've asked you once, I've asked you 10 times, and you've always obliged very nicely to tell the story about Beatrice. And so why don't you tell us and the kids listening and the teachers listening the story of Beatrice, because, and I know you need your gestures for it, but maybe you can explain the gestures.
Well, where I work, one of the guys who works there has 2 terrariums set up, and each one has a tarantula in it. And every now and then he goes out and buys a jar of a little case of live crickets and drops half of them in one cage and half of them in the other cage, and we sit and listen to crickets for a while.
I wish you could see Jill telling the story. She just dropped the crickets in one half, and with her other hand she dropped the crickets in the other half.
Did
okay.
Did they eat the tarantulas with the crickets?
Yeah.
The tarantulas eat the crickets.
They're spiders. You know, they don't spin webs, but they catch insects and eat them.
Oh, I did.
And you can buy crickets at pet stores, so they're real easy.
Elspeth doesn't like to hear this story because she always feels sorry for the poor crickets that get dumped in with the tarantulas. But go ahead, Jill.
But whenever someone catches some good insect, they'll bring it in for the tarantulas. Somebody, you know, people who work there will every now and then bring in a little tidbit for the tarantulas. So John, he's the guy that owns them, he showed up one day with this monstrous cockroach. It must have been, an inch and a half long. And
that's a mighty big cockroach.
Boy, have I got a treat for the tarantulas here. And he drops it in the left-hand cage. And, I guess we'd named the tarantulas before that. Somebody asked him what the tarantulas were named, and he just came up with them off the top of his head and said, Andrea and Francesca. So
great names for tarantulas.
Which one got the cockroach?
So
Andrea.
The cockroach got put in Andrea's cage, and we promptly forgot all about them. She didn't even chirp like the crickets did, so we didn't have anything to remember her by. And about a week later, somebody paused and looked in and said, this cockroach is still here. She hasn't been eaten yet. We all come over and stand around in this big crowd, and sure enough, the cockroach is sitting there twiddling its antennae, and tarantulas over on the other side of the cage just
twiddling whatever tarantulas twiddle.
Yeah. And apparently they had some kind of working agreement. They were too much the same size or something. The tarantula wouldn't eat the cockroach. So we started to take a liking for this cockroach, and we named her Beatrice.
Once you've named something, of course, it's a friend.
Oh yes. So every now and then And she would eat, Beatrice would eat the leftovers of Andrea's crickets.
That's right, because Andrea sucks the blood.
Right, she has to have them live, but the cockroaches don't care.
What's left over.
Yeah, she'll eat the meat, the cricket meat. then John got bored with them for a while and forgot about them, and they wouldn't even get water unless I went and watered them sometimes.
And you said it was very funny to watch a cockroach drink.
Oh, yes. She wouldn't get any water any other way. Usually, I guess they get enough moisture from what they eat.
But all she would get would be dry, dried up
crickets. And the
nothing
water...
Nothing juicy. No eye juice with her crickets.
We would give them water in jar lids, so she had to climb up on the edge a little bit and stick her head in it to get it.
Jill was just a cockroach, by the way. You can't see it, but Jill just climbed up on a jar lid and stuck her head in to drink. Okay, go on, Jill.
Well, anyway, John finally, after several weeks, finally remembered his tarantulas and went down, bought another carton of crickets, came back and dumped half of them in one cage and half of them in the other. And each tarantula immediately went and fastened itself onto a cricket and stood there sucking away on a cricket.
Starved. Both of them
starved. Oh, they were very, very hungry. And we were all sitting there doing what we were doing while John was pouring the crickets in. And all of a sudden he says, "Hey, you guys, come look at this." So we all come trotting over again and look in the cage, and here is Beatrice. And she is just as hungry as the tarantulas.
Maybe hungrier.
Maybe hungrier, because she's cockroaches aren't used to this feast and famine type existence that spiders tend to live by. Cockroaches are used to this
regular meals regular out of somebody's meals. Well-stocked kitchen.
So she was just, she could not wait for Andrea to finish the cricket she was eating and drop it. And she was trying to catch a live cricket herself. And she could run faster than the crickets, and she could corner the crickets. But every time she got a cricket into a corner, the cricket would just jump and get out of its way.
And that's where you need a gesture to see the story, too, because Jill just suddenly sent that cricket up into the air with her thumb. Okay.
So then after cornering two or three crickets, she'd come creeping up on the tarantula to see if maybe she could sneak a bite on.
And Jill is creeping around the table here with the
off the cricket that Andrea was eating. But Andrea knew what was going on. As soon as that cockroach got too close, she'd kind of lunge at her a little bit, and Beatrice would back off and go off and try and catch another cricket, which would just jump out of the way again. And finally, John took pity on her and stuck a pencil down in there and killed a cricket for her.
Smished the poor cricket.
So that she could catch one and start eating it. And a little bit later, I went back and looked in the cage, and she'd ripped a leg off of this dead cricket and was literally eating it like a drumstick. Was holding it, and you could see her head jerking out of this. She was tearing the meat off.
And holding it with little cockroach hands, little cockroach paws.
Here's this leg sticking up into the air, and she's got the big end of it down there by her mouth.
Oh, for
just
heaven's sake.
Just ripping it off. So that's
me goosebumps.
That's the story of Andrea and Beatrice. And let's see, how's our time? Brad there in the control room. 30 seconds. Oh, well, we're going to go a couple of minutes longer because I've got a story here that I just read to Demi at home this noon. And I said, should I read Bob Hart's story? And she said, oh, yes, read Bob Hart's story. And I'm going to have to change a few of the words. I think the words that I use will be okay for the radio. Bob Hart is a retired Air Force person who works for the state now and who takes classes at Sangamon State. And he's been in several of my classes. And I happen to have his notebook at home because I wanted to used some of his stories a while back, and I never returned it to him. And anyway, I read this one to Demi. It takes place in 1925, and Bob is telling about, he is 5 or 6 years old, and he's telling about his cousin Earl, who was 9 years old, and Earl was quite a scamp, as you can tell from these stories, and was always getting Bob into trouble. And I'm going to read you two of his stories. We haven't really had time to talk about all the different sorts of humor that there are, how, you know, nursery school, they come home with those same old corny jokes and think that they're funny as anything. And you kids know what the kindergartners' jokes are like and what third and fourth grade jokes are like and so forth. And there's all sorts of different jokes, but we won't go into all those. I will read Bob's story, and he's telling about his cousin. One day Earl told me that he had found a way to observe the planets in the daytime without the use of a telescope. The only equipment required was a raincoat, which while lying supine on the ground, you would look up through the sleeve and see the planets. He suggested that I try it, since I was skeptical. So we went out into the yard, and I almost knocked over a bucket of water getting into the proper position. However, I got the sleeve extended above my head, and Earl told me the approximate position of Jupiter in relationship to the position of the sun. Just as I had the sleeve lined up just right, and before I could observe the heavenly body, it started to rain, or rather flood, because Earl poured the bucket of water down the sleeve of the raincoat. Now, I guess this is an old joke, but I've never heard it myself.
I haven't either.
Well, that's one you can pull on your friends. Tell them that they can see the planets in the daytime and get the raincoat and get the bucket and get the sucker that doesn't know the story.
But they'll all know now because you told.
Well, some school it isn't listening to the program. Well, then here is his other story, which we'll finish with. One day we were walking through the geese pen, and as usual, the geese were hissing and sticking out their necks like snake at Earl, and he voiced his opinion that he hated the crummy geese. He used a vulgar swear word there, and that if he just had the time, he would fix them. Of course, I asked him how, and he explained, I would get me a good stout cord, like the chalk line in the tool shed, a piece of fat back, like the pork bellies in the smokehouse, and I'd tie the fat to the string at one end and the other end to the fence. You have noticed how every time a goose eats anything, it poops, he said. Well, they can't digest fat, and they eat everything they see. I would have the whole blasted bunch of them tied up in an hour, he said. Since Earl didn't have the time, and I did, I thought I would give it a try. With everything in order, I threw the piece of fat fastened to the heavy cord in the goose pen and watched to see the results. As soon as the piece of fat hit the ground, a goose gobbled it up and walked around with the piece of string hanging out of its bill.
That's a good picture.
Although it pooped several times, the piece of fat never came out, and I decided Earl was wrong. I went off to pursue other things and forgot about the experiment. Late that afternoon, the quiet of the day was shattered by a screech from my mother. Robert, come here! And she was near the goose pen. As soon as I got within reach of her, she grabbed me and started spanking me and scolding me for having all the geese tied up on a string. Yes, it had worked, and as I think about it, Earl's schemes always worked.
I wonder where Earl is now.
Probably in the penitentiary somewhere. Well, everybody, write in your funny stories. Write as funny as you can. We'll take the chance of being that wretched man. Realize that funny stories don't always come off quite as funny when you tell them or you write them, but we want to hear them anyway. And be sure to include the details so that we will get as much of the picture as we can of your funny stories. Okay? We'll take the chance on wetting our pants.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.